Chapter 5. Breaking Out. We left the nation of Israel in Egypt as slaves. It was a terrible life for them. They were unpaid, working for the most basic of food and accommodation. They were forced to work long hours of heavy manual labour on Pharaoh's latest building projects. And the Egyptian taskmasters were always close by, armed to the teeth, with a whip at the ready to lash your back if you slacked off. And now, signpost 3, Passover. Here's where an Israelite called Moses comes into the picture. Though an Israelite by birth, Moses, through an amazing twist of circumstances, had been raised as an Egyptian in Pharaoh's court. But when he reached adulthood, he opted to go back to his roots, laying aside his Egyptian privileges and aligning himself with the Israelite slaves. Then God revealed himself to him through the famous incident of the burning bush, the spontaneous combustion of a bush in the hot, dry desert. This was a fairly common phenomenon, but on this occasion it didn't burn up. Moses went to investigate, and God spoke to him there. He commissioned Moses to approach Pharaoh on his behalf with the demand to free the Israelites. But Pharaoh was no pushover and dug his heels in time after time. God sent a series of plagues on Egypt to nudge him in the right direction, but they all failed to do so, until the last one. This came to be known as the Passover. And here's how it worked. On a given night, it was revealed, death would strike the firstborn of every Egyptian family, but it would pass over the Israelite families, who took certain steps at God's command to avert it. Each family would prepare a lamb dinner so that they would have full stomachs when the call came to up sticks and leave the land of slavery. They were also to take some of the lamb's blood and smear it outside their houses around the doors. This was an indicator that, for this family, death had already taken place, and those inside the house need thus have nothing to fear from it. As midnight struck on the fateful night, a great cry of grief went up all across Egypt. The death of the firstborn was the straw that broke the camel's back. Pharaoh at last gave the Israelites the all-clear to leave. And so began the great exodus from slavery that Jews remember to this day at their annual Passover celebrations. Under Moses' direction, they headed out on the long journey to the Promised Land, a homeland in Canaan. God went with them, guiding them supernaturally as they headed into the desert that lay between them and their destination. For now, remember this about the Passover signpost. A lamb was killed, the tyrant was defeated, the captives went free. Which leads us to signpost 4, the Red Sea. The freed slaves had a scare when they reached the shores of the Red Sea. By that time, Pharaoh had had second thoughts about letting them go. How would he succeed with his state-building projects with no slave labour to draw upon? So he dispatched his military, horsemen and chariots, to pursue the Israelites, round them up and bring them back. God's people thus found themselves trapped. They had empty desert on either side, the Red Sea in front of them, and the Egyptian chariots coming up behind. They needed a miracle, and they got one. God, who for the most part chooses to not interfere with natural processes, reserves the right to intervene directly now and then when it suits his purposes, and he did so now. He caused the waters of the Red Sea to part, allowing the Israelites to cross to the other side on dry land and holding back the Egyptian troops until they were safely across. Then he removed the restraints, and the Egyptian forces rushed across in pursuit, only to be overwhelmed as the waters of the Red Sea surged back into place. All were drowned. The Israelites, watching from the far side, breathed a sigh of relief that they were free at last. Now they could press on purposefully through the desert towards the Promised Land. That's another one to remember. Passing through the water to safety at the other side. Just before we move on, it's worth pointing out that in ancient times, history wasn't recorded the same way we do it today. We tend to expect hard facts, verifiable by cold evidence. But then it was different. Each nation had its own backstory, which wove together strands from its history and, in doing so, gave them a slant that helped explain the nation's origins and development. Not every item was necessarily hard fact, even though there was usually some of that behind it. It was more a matter of interpreting the factual aspects, sometimes exaggerating or even embroidering them in order to give meaning to their lives and provide a sense of national identity and purpose in moving forward. Many Christian scholars today regard much of the Old Testament history that we've been dipping into as this kind of history with a bias and not necessarily literally true in every detail. You can decide for yourself in due course. But whatever view we take, it makes no difference at all to our looking at bits of it here because the signposts hold good regardless. Now, back to those Israelites en route to the Promised Land.